So welcome back to this special series, kind of, well, I don't know whether it's called Back to School series or not, Sex Matter. Today, our topic is building boundaries. Last week, if you were with us, Pastor Carson has given us a number of very practical and important reminders, especially on God's perspective on this topic. From God's perspective, sex is not simply an expression of love, even though people say that. Sex is not just an act of pleasure or a reproduction process. Sex is the act in which God permanently bond two flesh to become one. So it's not just biology. It's more than that. And also, Pastor Carson also shared about, from God's perspective, about marriage too. Marriage is not just a reflection of what culture believes, whether it's Canadian culture, American culture, or the world culture. Marriage is a reflection of Christ's union with the church, which is way more than what we thought about marriage, I'm sure most of us, right? And also, from God's perspective, the identity that we hope to receive from a sexual relationship is given to us by God as well. From God's perspective, me and you are unified with Him. We are His, and we belong to Him as well. So when we go back to Genesis, at the beginning of the Bible, we know that after the creation of the world, God saw everything. Everything He had made was very good. But despite of all the goodness, something was missing, right? Genesis 1:18 said, God said, it's not good that man should be alone. And God created a helper for the man. We all know this story too well. God took one of the man's rib and made it into a woman and brought her to the man. Well, I don't know the actual biology, even though I was studying biology, but I think, wow, this is amazing. You know how God did that, you know, reaction or whatever, I will ask Him, you know, in eternity for sure. And then last week we mentioned about this verse, Genesis 2:24. God made this important proclamation about marriage in Genesis 2:24. A man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. We remember from last time, right? And that's God's design about sex and marriage from the very beginning. This is the original design. Marriage was good. And all the sexual relationship established according to God's design was pleasing to Him. Well, that is great, right? I think we would like that to be forever. But, there's a but. We all know that. The Genesis story did not stop at that particular verse, 2:24. And starting right in the very beginning, chapter 3, something happened. Sin entered the world. And what a mess, you know, afterwards, right? You can tell. When men chose to disobey God, the relationship between man and God was destroyed, as we all know that too well as well. But also, instead of following God's given original design, men started to walk their own ways. So while on one hand, sin distorted the relationship between man and God, sin also distorted human relationship as well. Do you know that? It's not just, okay, man disobeyed God, okay, we are sinners, right? Well, this is a spiritual sin, but it's more than that. The problem is much bigger than we thought. So sin distorted the human relationship, and including sexual relationship as well. So that's why even sexuality was distorted. And that's why after Genesis 3, we see examples after examples how man disobeyed God and how this original design by God was distorted and how the boundaries which is set by God was being challenged time after time as well. And talking about setting boundaries in relationship, King David learned it in a hard way. In this story with a woman called Bathsheba, I'm sure some of us might know that. Usually, I don't think we do this in Kapos, right? I don't know what's the curriculum now, but I would say, well, this is way too much. But I'm sure in this audience, I think we can handle that. As we all know, right, David was one of, if not the greatest king in the whole Israel. He was chosen by God. He was even called to be a man after God's heart. Wow, what an excellent phrase, a man after God's heart. But as we take a closer look about David's life, we notice that he was not immune from temptation, especially in this area, the sexual area as well. And when we go to the chapter that we will be exploring, chapter 11 of the book of 2 Samuel, we notice David at that time, 2 Samuel chapter 11, he was no longer the young person, you know, who is fighting against the giant. Well, David is much more mature at the time. Actually, he is the king, and his dynasty is also much more established at the time. And the background of chapter 11 of 2 Samuel told us that it's a war time. It's not a peaceful time. But interestingly, while all the kings at the time went out to battle, interestingly, David did not go. We don't know why. Maybe, well, either he was sick or, you know, maybe he was too busy. But I think wartime at that time of the history, I think that was the main thing, right? The king's supposed to be not sitting in the control room, but he's supposed to be in the front, leading the troops. Instead of going all the way to the front line, David at the time, he sent someone else. And instead of leading the army in the front line, David was at Jerusalem in his palace and his home, you know. We don't know why. The Bible did not really tell us why, but something happened afterwards. The story began at the moment when David woke up. Surprisingly, the Bible said that he woke up in the evening. I don't know whether you have that experience for some time, but for some people in college or university, right? Oh, after the whole, you pulled a whole nighter, you know, you slept, you know, for another 24 hours. Oh, wake up. It's like this hour maybe, right? Well, David, we don't know why, but he woke up pretty late. I'm sure it's not afternoon, but almost in the evening. And perhaps he was staying up late. I don't know. On one hand, maybe he was busy in other business, or maybe he was partying. We don't know. But there was David, you know, waking up in the evening. And after he woke up, instead of going to work, you know, instead of, you know, meeting other guests, you know, political gender, whatever, David was actually walking on the roof of the palace. I know, maybe, he wants to stretch a little bit. And surprisingly, he saw from the roof a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful. Well, the Bible said that as well. And if it happens to any of us, I'm sure we will be embarrassed, you know, while someone doing something I'm not supposed to see, right? But to our surprise, David's reaction is pretty different. When David saw Bathsheba bathing, he could have just ignored and left. At that time, David was not a young boy. He is married, and he, a lot of family members at the time, right? So David could have ended the temptation by leaving the scene at that particular moment. And nothing will happen. And there won't be any more of this chapter. But he did not. He did not. David sent his servant and wanted to inquire about that woman. For example, you know, in our time, you would go to Facebook and check out, you know, that person's name, right? At that time, he sent someone and who find out who she was. And after a while, the servant came back. This faithful servant came back and have a very detailed report. Well, her name is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, and she's also the wife of Uriah, the Hittite. Oh, what? Uriah? Well, we don't know too much about Uriah, but David knew he was one of the great soldiers under David's dynasty at the time, and he was fighting right at the front line. So when David realized that Bathsheba was married, he should have realized that there is a boundary issue. Natural, obvious, right? You don't need to, you know, have a PhD to know that. But at that time, David could have stopped, but he did not. And instead of sending people, he sent people to take her to palace. Well, you can imagine it is not a business meeting. he is not for other agenda. And of course, when Bathsheba received this message from the king, right, the king, she has no choice. Can she say no? I don't think at the time she had that choice. Well, she would need to go to the palace. The Bible did not hide what was happened. The Bible did not hide. Bathsheba came to the king and he lay with her. Then she returned to her house. After this encounter, well, this is only a sentence, but I'm sure there will be a lot behind that. After the encounter, perhaps the king would pretend as if nothing has happened. I'm the king, you know. It was just a one-night thing, right? Perhaps the king was thinking Bathsheba's husband was miles away, right, in the battlefield. As long as we keep the secret, you know, me, Bathsheba, and some of the servant, but the servant not supposed to tell anyone, right? They are the faithful servants. So who else would know it? There's no reporter. There's no, you know, TV channels around at the time, right? So no one would dare to be the whistleblower, you know. So he can pretend nothing has happened. The day after, the week after, you know, he would go back to his normal life. Well, the king thought that what had happened that evening would have no consequence. I don't know whether, is David too naive? I don't know. Yeah, at the time. The consequence actually came much faster than expected. And the woman conceived. And it said, and she sent a very simple text. I don't know what at the time. I am pregnant. Oh boy. I don't know. Can you imagine when David received her text? You know, if there's a text. Wow, something happened at that moment. I'm sure he will be shocked. Well, David should be much smarter, right? When we look back, well, David, you know what happened, right? And then when David realized that Bathsheba was pregnant, he should have stopped. But he didn't. Instead, he started to cover up. Well, this is a long story. To make the long story short, first the king tried to call back Uriah, that soldier, right, the Bathsheba husband, so that Uriah can have a break, well, which is quite abnormal. It's supposed to be wartime, you know. How come, you know, I can imagine Uriah receive a message, okay, come back, you know, I'll give you a vacation. Doesn't make sense, you know, at the time. But the king tried different things so that Uriah can meet his wife so that the pregnancy can be cover up. I don't need to go into the details, but you can imagine, you know, the king probably have all the plans at the time. But however, Uriah was a faithful soldier. Even he was back. Well, he obeyed the command, so he can't just say no, right? So he came back to Jerusalem. He did not go down to his own house, and he did not meet his wife at all. This plan A did not work for David. So eventually, the covering up did not work. And at the end, the king used his power, and he secretly worked with Joab, which is the captain at the time, and Uriah was sent to the forefront of the hardest fighting, and eventually he was struck down and died, which is pretty sad, you know. David did not directly kill this person, but he did all the planning, you know, wisely, you know, smartly, and eventually Uriah was dead. So from one mistake to another, from adultery to murder, now the king finally get what he wants. 2 Samuel 11, 26, 27 said, when Bathsheba heard that her husband was dead, she lamented over him. When the mourning was over, David sent and brought her to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. Oh, I don't know whether you expect this ending. Well, this is still a long, long story afterwards. But even at this particular moment, I don't know marriage, you know? What kind of marriage is that, right? And while things seem to be settled, well, kind of settled, right? Okay, well, it's good. Now she's married to David. David got what he won. The author of 2 Samuel had a crucial footnote, just this one sentence at the end of this chapter. But the thing that David had done displeased the Lord. The thing that David had done displeased the Lord. And later on, God also sent Nathan the prophet to rebuke the king. Why have you despised the word of the Lord to do what is evil in his sight? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. The problem of David, I'm sure we are quite clear. He despised the word of God. He did not respect God's original design of marriage. He crossed the boundaries. And just imagine with me once again, after David first saw, you remember that evening, right? First saw Bathsheba from the rooftop. He did not entertain the moment. If David simply left, you know, that rooftop, I don't think this tragic story would ever happen. And after seeing Bathsheba, just imagine, if David did not send someone to find out, you know, who she was, I don't think this story would happen that way. Or just imagine, even if David find out who Bathsheba was, if he stopped there, I don't think the story would reach such a sad ending. When David despised the word of God, the command of God, the original plan of God, he did not respect God's original design of marriage. He gave in to temptation and especially this sexual temptation. So, after going through this, usually we don't talk about this in kapos, right? You know, I'm sure this is more a mature content story. After we go through the story of David and Bathsheba, is there anything we can pick up from this story about building better boundaries when it comes to the area of sexual relationship? This story made me think about another verse, which is in New Testament, which is written by the Apostle Paul at the very end of his life. He had a very important reminder to Timothy about overcoming all the temptation and building boundaries. 2 Timothy 2:22. This is a nice verse, right? You see all the numbers here. 2 Timothy 2:22. So you got to remember this verse, you know. So flee youthful passion and pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. Paul urged Timothy to develop I would call it a threefold running strategy. A running strategy, okay. To run away from sinful desires, to run after what is right, but never run alone. Let's tackle one at a time. Strategy number one, run away from sinful desire. On a personal level, I think we are talking something more practical now. From the story, you know, in the Old Testament, now let's think about 2022. We all know that the battle against sexual temptation is getting more and more challenging, honestly, right? One generation ago, I don't know how many years ago, before we have internet, I don't know whether anyone was still old enough to remember. Some of us probably was not even born yet at the time, right? Before we have internet, I was told pornography are not as easily accessible as nowadays, right? And I don't think I need to elaborate about that. Or even compare 10 years ago. I still remember I share in a lot of parenting workshops. I still remember way back, 10 years ago maybe, around the time. People asked the parents at the time, make sure you set up your desktop computer in the middle of the sitting room. Yeah, don't hide it in the corner. So everyone will see that, right? But you'll be laughing, right? 10 years later, who need a desktop, right? Nobody did. I don't know whether you... Do we see a desktop at home? Well, maybe if you a gamer, I think. But most of us probably use laptop or, you know, whatever, right? At the time, you know, we would tell the parent, yeah, make sure, you know, you set up your desktop, you know, very visibly so that your kids, whatever they are visiting, you know. But now, everything is much more mobile, right? iPad, you know, cell phone, you know, everything. Even the watch, you know, as well. Even, I don't know how old people will have cell phone now. Well, at least I know in elementary school, some kids will have cell phone, grade 5, grade 6 maybe, right? So our battle of winning the war on sexual temptation, honestly, is getting more and more challenging. So my advice for you, for me, for everyone here, be intentional. Be intentional in how you set up your computer monitor at home. I'm sure you still have a monitor. While you may have all the freedom you want, right? But be intentional where you use your smartphone as well. I'm sure it's just small little things, but it's not easy, right? But let's be intentional. And if you're in a relationship too, run away from sinful desire. I also give you some practical suggestion. Set up healthy boundaries with your boyfriend, girlfriend. You have to plan ahead. You can't just, have no planning. Plan ahead about where you would or you would not hang out. The location matters. Set up boundaries when you both are in the car, when you spend time in each other's home. How do you set up boundaries? And also set up boundaries when you plan to go for any traveling trips. If you think you have no concern in going camping with your girlfriend alone, I'm sure I want to talk to you, right? So there will be boundaries, right? In locally, or if you even traveling as well. So number one, run away from sinful desire. Number two, to run after what is right. Besides talking all the don'ts, right, it seems like number one is more the don'ts. When you are in a relationship, remember to always put God first in your relationship. It's not just a slogan, you know, but in reality, remember God, involve God, you know, in your relationship. Have mutual and honest conversation about how you two can pursue what is right together. How you two can glorify God in your relationship. And don't assume, oh yeah, well, we are already in college or university, or maybe you already finished that already, right? I learned everything, you know, all the theories, but it's not just theory. Bring all the concern in the light, and let's discuss together in honesty. Because if we just assume something, you know, probably you will either forget it or you won't do it. So put in the light everything, all the issue, and pray constantly too with your boyfriend and girlfriend. Ask God to give you two a relationship that is honoring Him, honoring Him. Number three, never run alone. The journey of pursuing purity, I'm sure next week we'll talk more about that. It's not supposed to be a one-man show or one-man journey. It can only be done by joining together with those who are honest and serious about God. So always think about accountability in koinonia, especially, you know, we are not, you know, strangers, right? Just come here and go, right? The community, the oikos, yeah, we are trying to build up accountabilities. So, for example, find a believer of the same gender so you can share honestly and to pray together. Maybe similar age, right? So that person can be your brother, or break him in your sister to keep you accountable. And by all means, I know it's not easy, find a mentor. Find a mentor, someone who is more mature spiritually, who's able to share and support you, especially in this area, in winning the battle on sexual temptation. So don't run alone, and you don't have to run alone. So those are the three strategies, right? Never run alone, and also to run away from the sexual desire, and also run after the right thing as well.